The growing need for air conditioning is not necessarily due to climate change, but due to bad design. So says Fergus Nicol, the professor of environmental architecture at Oxford Brookes University. Here we hear him from a climate conference held on June 3, 2006, organized by the Campaign for Climate Change. It's www.campaigncc.org.
Now, my presentation will be very different to Sue's, as you will see. What I'm going to talk about is basically air conditioning, because the part that air conditioning is playing is a very interesting example of the type of impact that particular technologies can have. This is really a slightly rougher version of what Sue showed you, that buildings are about half the use about half the energy. And I think we've got to remember that the use of energy has not just environmental consequences, it also has social consequences. This was Kalman's take on it a long time ago, but clearly what he's saying is oil, the search for oil creates instability, and we know from the last 2 or 3 years when we've had enormous instability in Iraq and other parts of the world where oil is sought after, and particularly when the American, which is the biggest economy, is hungry for oil in the way that Sue has said, that it no longer is producing enough for itself and is dependent on others. It's going to create instability, whoever we're talking about. So what I'm going to be talking about, this is my area of research, and it's really about what conditions people find comfortable. And there's a whole, fairly small, but a whole science of thermal comfort. And the conditions in buildings which make people comfortable. And there have traditionally been two approaches to defining comfort. One is you say, here's a human being, has a certain physiology, the physics of heat transfer between people and the environment, and how can we define where there's a balance between the amount of heat being produced by somebody in their normal metabolism and the heat they're losing to the environment. And clearly there has to be a balance, because otherwise the person would either heat up or cool down, and metabolism is very sensitive to the temperature of the body. So that's one way of looking at it. The other is actually to go around and ask, say, a group like yourselves, you know, how many of you are too hot? How many of you are comfortable? And how many of you are? And you'll get a range of answers. I mean, there's a range of different clothing in this room, you know, people with jackets and people in shirt sleeves and so on. And clearly there'll also be a range of different answers to the question, how do you feel, on that scale I showed you earlier on. Now, with the advent of air conditioning, it became possible for comfort to be a product. The air conditioning industry, and this is the words of Professor Ollie Fanger, who's been the doyen of thermal comfort studies. You go all over the world, and he's had medals and so on from different air conditioning industries all over the world. And this was the introduction to the book that he wrote in 1970, where he says that thermal comfort is the product which is produced and sold to the consumer. This is the heating and ventilating industry created this, and what they needed was a way of defining comfort which would allow them to sell it as a product. Before that, the idea of comfort before, you know, this sort of approach, the idea of comfort was really fairly vague. It was, and thermal comfort would probably not have been seen as any separate from any other type of comfort, just being comfortable. But defined on that scale that I showed you earlier, you know, from hot to cold, we immediately it becomes something that you can sell. What we want to do is to sell an environment that will create the neutral bit in the middle. But they've defined the problem in terms of, because what they're trying to do is selling heating and ventilating, they've had to define it in terms that they can have control over. So it has to be defined in terms of temperature, if humidity and air movement and all those sorts of things. And better buildings are then buildings which supply an environment which is then within your definition of comfort, which is this is the heat exchange that you have. You know, the human body, you can see black on yours and red on mine. The human body, the person is standing there, passive, being acted upon by the environment. And this was their view. And these are the standards, the international standards. I don't know if this is the most recent version, but you can see that the standards are saying that buildings can be divided into A class, B class, or C class according to how accurately they keep the temperature constant. So that an A class building in the summer has to keep the temperature within half a degree of 24.5, otherwise it becomes a B class building. The implications of that are obvious. An A-class building is only achievable with not just any old air conditioning system. I don't know how many of you work in air-conditioned buildings, but an air-conditioned building that keeps the temperature within half a degree is certainly a very highly air-conditioned building. And it's a bit vague here, but in fact, the interesting thing is that in the US, This standard, which is, this is the international standard, but it's based very largely on the US standard. And in the US, the standard is called the ASHRAE standard. Now, ASHRAE is the American Society of Heating, Refrigeration and Air Conditioning Engineers. So the air conditioning engineers are defining the acceptable indoor environments on the basis of what they can provide. So clearly it's a sort of circular self-fulfilling thing. And the implications for energy are enormous. In fact, it's generally considered that you have two buildings, equivalent in most other ways, but one is air-conditioned and the other isn't. That the air-conditioned building will use twice as much energy as the non-air-conditioned building. And you can see why, because actually it's not so much the heating and cooling of the air, though that obviously uses quite a lot, cooling and part of this is heating, but also pumps and fans. You have to blow the air around in order to maintain this very cool, this very constant indoor temperature. You have to blow a large amount of air around. And therefore, what we're saying, what they're telling us is that in order to comply with international standards, we have to have these very constant temperatures. And so there's a ratchet effect. Air conditioning, like cars, you know how cars started out as something which is a plaything for the rich. And now we've got a situation where it's quite difficult in lots of places to survive without a car, because you have the nearest shop is so far away that you have to drive to it, and there's very often no reasonable transport alternative. So, and in just the same way, certainly in the US, a large proportion of the individual houses, and the ones that Sue was showing you in Arizona, are prime examples. have to be air-conditioned. And it's not just that they need to be air-conditioned because it's a hot climate, but also because they've been designed to be air-conditioned. And the danger is not just that they use a lot of energy, but also that they're very dependent on that energy. So they're very fragile. The whole system is very fragile, and it's happening in Europe. In southern Europe, I think it's 9% increase per annum in southern Europe in the number of air-conditioned buildings. Even in northern Europe, because they're building the sort of buildings that Sue was talking about, you know, lots of glass, no shading, etc., etc., that they're having to air-condition buildings, even in a climate like our own, where air-conditioning, you know, we all live in non-air-conditioned houses, but so we're quite used to living in non-air-conditioned houses, but when we go to the office, somehow we need to be air-conditioned. It needs to be air-conditioned, and it needs to be air-conditioned because it's badly designed. It's designed to be air-conditioned. It's not designed to, and the air-conditioning industry actually predict that if there's another couple of summers like 2003, which Sue's right, they quite likely will be, that they will be able to, they will really break into the home market. People find they can't sleep in their house. They're offered, you know, here's this thing. Okay, here's a bit of energy, but you know, it means you can sleep at night. Everybody will begin to have some sort of cooling appliance in their house as well as a heating appliance. And the implications for energy use could be quite severe. I mean, it may be that they'll only use them on the hottest days, and certainly if energy prices increase a lot, they may only use them on the hottest days. But there's there's likely to be an increase in energy use through and in the energy profile of the ordinary house. Now, if we go back to the original idea that you define comfort by how people feel, how people respond, we can say, well, like other animals, we do have this thermal regulatory system. We do behave in, you know, in the cold, our blood vessels constrict, and so we don't lose so much heat. We have all this. But also, human beings, because they are uniquely vulnerable in some ways, because they don't have fur and this sort of thing, they've also developed a number of mechanisms, namely things like clothing and housing, which have allowed them to survive in all over the world. But this has already also created a new kind of vulnerability, because it means that we are part of society, and society is necessary, the continuation of society is necessary to our continued existence. And this is the way that the authors of The Dialectical Biologist, it's a very good book if you ever get a chance to read it, they show that it's not simply a consequence of our thermal needs as a thing, but also the social milieu which we're in. And so this individual, who is the paradigm for the existing standards, is unreal, and the most of us are more like this character, who is interacting with his environment. And what we find is that we change ourselves to suit our climate, so that here we have a character in the summer in Pakistan, Sadu Sharif, which is in the north of Pakistan. And in the winter, he will be wearing this sort of clothing. So that there is a variation. We do respond to the environment, both in the way that we clothe ourselves, but also in the way that we create, it's difficult to see here, but we change our metabolic rate, maybe we move more slowly in the heat. That's not very shown here, we create air velocity, and it is possible, therefore, just by using those simple mechanisms, to be comfortable in a temperature, quite a wide temperature range. Here you see, this is the number of surveys in offices in Pakistan, and you can see that the indoor temperature varies very considerably because buildings in Pakistan are not very efficient. They allow the indoor temperature to vary between, like in the winter, down to 12, and up in the summer, right up to 34. But over a large part of that, most people are comfortable. This is the proportion of people who are comfortable. As you can see, people can be comfortable between 20 and 30 degrees. Quite different to the plus or minus half a degree, which the air conditioning industry would like us to think is all that we can be comfortable at. I'm not advocating that we should allow our buildings to vary as much as this, but clearly we could allow our buildings to vary far more than they do at the moment. And in most cases, we live in buildings which vary far more than the air conditioning industry would like us to believe is possible. The other thing people do is to use the building controls. Here again, we're looking at some data from Pakistan. Similar things happen in British offices. It's just that I have I've got all this data about Pakistan. But you can see that they switch on fans, they open windows, and in the winter they switch on. They turn on the heaters to heat the thing. And people interact with the building. In fact, the building is not something that exists outside us. It's part of the way that we interact with the environment. So that what you get is comfort, which is achieved by this interaction between the building and the environment. But the interaction, and I think it's really very important to say, that this is done within a climatic, social and economic cultural context. That, you know, what's right for the Pakistanis, 20 to 30, maybe in this country it's 18 to 25, I don't know. I mean, there'll be a different range of temperatures which we normally experience, which we would be comfortable at. But nevertheless, there's a wide range of temperatures. And the overall result of all this adaptation, as we've called it, this is what's called the adaptive model in thermal comfort, which is just saying that people adapt to the conditions they find. And what you find is that people are comfortable. This is the temperature which people are comfortable at, and this is the mean temperature they experience. And you can see that in really hot countries, people can be comfortable at temperatures which are not quite as high as the temperature which they find. Maybe they would like it to be a bit cooler, but nevertheless they're comfortable at higher temperatures. In cool conditions, they're comfortable at lower temperatures. And this is because there's a natural tendency to make yourself comfortable wherever you are. So, what does this mean for designing buildings, and how we can get over this possibility of the buildings being all air conditioned? Well, so long as people know what to expect when you go to the office or you go to work, the thing that you don't want to do is to find that the temperature's three or 5 degrees colder than you'd expected, so that you should have brought another piece of clothing and you didn't. You need to know what to expect. The temperature changes within the day need to be reasonably small. We don't want more than about 2 or 3 degrees change within the day. Otherwise, we begin to become uncomfortable. It begins to increase the possibility of discomfort. And although in theory people can take clothes off, if they haven't come expecting to, they won't necessarily have the right sort of clothing on. They've only they've only put on one jacket and they can't take it off or whatever. And people need to have control of the buildings. Building has to allow them to adapt and shouldn't prejudge what they will find comfortable, so that people need to be able to adjust the building to their own needs. And so long as the environment, so within the cultural norms of any society, the people can make themselves comfortable so long as they have that control. I mean, if you're sitting by a large window and the sun shines in through the window and you haven't got a curtain and there's nothing you can do about it, then clearly you're not in control of the situation. But if you have a building which allows you that control, which has out external louvers maybe, or that you can adjust, or even an indoor louver and the ability to open the window. I mean, the very common thing that you have in the thing is you can't close the curtains and open the window, because I expect you've all come across this, or those terrible Venetian blinds that rattle when the wind comes in. You know, those sorts of things are clearly there will be conflicts, and the other problem is, like we've just had here, we had to close the window because of the noise outside. So there are clearly restrictions on that, and you have to take those into account. You have to be aware of them, but nevertheless, it should be possible in the climate we live in to be comfortable in any condition. And my view is really reflects that of Sue, that the need for air conditioning is an indication of a bad design, except in very extreme circumstances.
The growing need for air conditioning is not necessarily due to climate change, but due to bad design. So says Fergus Nicol, the professor of environmental architecture at Oxford Brookes University. Here we hear him from a climate conference held on June 3, 2006, organized by the Campaign for Climate Change. It's www.campaignCC.org.